Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Denise. This is part two of, I think I'm going to call it Bloody Hell, No Coincidences, part two. Bill, we were just recording part one, and all of a sudden, we're at kind of a really kind of important time, and then just dropped off. Mm-hmm. So thank you for being willing to do part two. I think it's really, really kind of no coincidences there either.
Absolutely.
By the way,
I'm really running off of the mouth too much.
Well, no, I have to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that at times when you're having very important calls or situations, that there's times when these things happen and it's actually almost like a good surprise? Have you ever noticed that?
Absolutely. It's once again, there's no coincidences, and sometimes the universe presses the pause button and says, Bill, there's an opportunity now to really think before you speak. So maybe that was it. I would like to think so.
Oh my gosh, that's really fun. You know why? Okay, so this is playful, everyone. I have my own awareness of my neurostyle that when I get super excited, I can be a bit loquacious. I talk. So prior to meetings now, I let people know, hello, and I kind of send a little outline. And I'm like, I would like to hear all about you before I get too excited. So I think that mindful pause, or that what I call shush, I feel like that's the time when a lot of integration happens. When we quiet our mind, it's our chance to sort of let everything integrate. And in the part one interview, you were talking about your pilgrimage and that you made a specific intention with that really was in alignment with your first movie. Can you talk about that?
I had been struggling for quite a long time, Denise, to actually get the finance together to make the intuition film. Prior to this, I'd been really quite successful in getting films up. I'd been on a bit of a roll, and for about 10 years I'd made a movie a year, which is quite unusual in the feature film industry. You know, and these are big movies. These are multi-million dollar movies. They're not small movies. But with this particular film, number one, I wanted it to be a documentary. Number two, I wanted to have complete and utter total control on it. And I guess I made it hard for people to put money into because I didn't know what I was doing or where I wanted to go with it. I was basically saying, look, trust me, there's a good story here, but I don't quite know how I'm going to tell it yet. And so what I did, in sort of almost in frustration, I decided to walk the Camino de Santiago. And as I said earlier, I'm not sure whether this came across or not, I decided that I would dedicate the pilgrimage, the 500-mile pilgrimage across Spain, to the film that I wished to make, to PGS. And so I decided to do the walk intuitively, which meant making no plans, organizing nothing in advance. And it was absolutely anathema to me because I'm a highly organized person. It frustrates Jennifer up the wazoo that I plan so much. She doesn't plan anything. She just lives moment to moment. And we're so totally, totally.
By the way, I'm smiling out of what a miracle that is, that the two of you have such complementary neurostyles like that. It's actually, I'm hearing it, I'm feeling it, and I've experienced it in relationships. So I don't know, that's like its own book, how the two of you have made it work. You know what I mean? So
40 years, yeah, exciting.
Yes, it's exciting actually. So I just want to acknowledge what you just said. That's to me very important in the work I do daily as a psychiatrist and in the shows that I'm producing. What I'm hearing is that you did use a very focused intention perspective when you did that walk. You were doing a moving meditation but you were now learning a new side of Bill, the Bill that was linear and logical. And as you said in part one, when you're doing a film, you're directing something, and also the type of films you were doing once a year were very different than this, right? So you were at this huge, huge, like, shift, paradigm shift for your way of producing in your universe view. So what you did was you decided to embrace that unknown, but you had a purpose. I want everyone to make sure that when we say there's no coincidences, it's not just this, like, it's, you can have a focused intention where you're leading from the heart or you want something to happen. And I often, Bill, I talk about the linears and the non-linears. And I did a show called The Browser Windows and the Karmic Burners. So this was a karmic burner desire to produce and direct a film where you were asking people that already knew the very, like, established, successful Bill with a different genre of films, different universe perspective. So to me, this walk that you took was like a huge, like, demarcation of a next level kind of ascension. You sort of surrendered, but you did have a purpose. I want everyone to know that. I think a lot of times when people hear, oh, the story of The Secret or the movie The Secret, it seems like woo, but you're still having everyone focused intention. But in the moment, you're learning how to listen to your own inner voice, which I feel like this walk was exactly a microcosm for you, Bill.
It's funny you say that, Denise. You're absolutely right, although I didn't realize it at the time. I had no clue what was happening really on a internal recalibration level. Each day I took each day as it came, and it was a struggle each day. I wrote a book about the walk called The Way, My Way. The Camino is called The Way. A lot of people call it
The Camino. Wait, when did you do this? What year did you do this?
I wrote the book. I did the walk in April, May, and I wrote the book in September of 2013. And the book has become kind of like required reading now for people doing The Camino. It's become a bestseller.
Wow.
And in fact, a distributor has optioned the film rights to it. I've said that I would option the film rights, but only if Hugh Jackman plays me. But I've got a couple of reservations about that. He's not quite good looking enough, and he's not quite buffed enough. But
My gosh, you're so much fun.
But he's a good actor.
Ready? Go, Bill, go! Rarrow, everyone. Bill's in touch with his inner confidence, so keep going.
Dear idea.
That's a whole other thing.
I don't want a film made about myself. Come on, give
me
a break.
I have a question. Did you, when you wrote The Way, was it before or after you had met with Paul Selig?
No, it was much before. I met with Paul, I think, in 2016. So I wrote this book in 2013.
Okay, so much of the different visionaries and pioneers and, you know, the readings I've done, but then also what I connect with in my own unique way, that whole idea of The Way. I mean, it's interesting because I produced a show that was really fun, that's kind of edgy, that had The Way in it, but I'm excited. So I would love to have a link to that book so people can, I want to read it. It's interesting if you were to reread your own book, I don't know when the last time you did that is, and then superimpose it on all of the meetings you've had with Paul Selig, and maybe you can, this is a good time to really honor who Paul Selig is. Because to me, when I heard that you wrote this book, and it was right after you did that moving meditation and you had intentionality about PGS intuition, and then Paul was very much a big part of this movie and a part of, you know, the paradigm shift, it's kind of cool. So number one, can you tell us who Paul is? And number two, when's the last time you read your own book?
To answer the last question first, I try not to go back over my material because I'm always intensely embarrassed and feel that it's not good enough. And the only thing that gives me solace in that is that I heard the Beatles never listen to their own songs again, so I figure I'm in good company.
Oh my God, I love that. One of my when I was I love that. Okay, keep going.
Paul Selig is an extraordinary man. He's an extraordinary man, and he has now channeled 9 books, 3 lots of trilogies. Paul and his work has changed my life. It's probably the biggest fundamental influence on my change way of thinking. How I met Paul was that I had almost come to the end of the post-production of PGS, and I was quite interested in channeling. And so I Googled, I remember Googling just the word channelers, and up came Paul Selig and one of his books. In fact, it was his 4th book at that stage, called The Book of Mastery. So I ordered it on Kindle, and I immediately read it. And it resonated with me so deeply that I then went back and read his preceding 3 books, starting with I Am the Word. And then when I got to the end of that, I said to Jennifer, we've got to go to New York and interview Paul. And Jennifer, who is a producer on all my films, said, well, we don't have the money for that, and we've finished all our filming, and is this really important? And I said, yes, it's really important. I really believe that he will be an important addition to the film. So we went to New York. In fact, we interviewed Paul.
Wait, can I just say something? Time out, pause, time out. I feel like blowing a whistle. So the irony of this is that Jennifer is highly intuitive and really has been embracing that view of the universe. And then you are new to this and you come up with an aha moment, the Paul Selig idea. And then there's something amazing about the balance of your energy frequencies, the two of you, because it sounds like she has a lot of logic and reason as well. So oh, you guys does. Seem like an absolute, like if I were doing like a cartoon, like I just want to acknowledge the balance. So that's really amazing. And also that you kind of, you guys have this way of when you override, you look at it together, then you're like, okay, let's go to New York.
You got to understand something about Jennifer, Denise, and that is she is terrifying. She is so scary. I mean,
you know, like, is that the secret to staying married for 40 years?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. she scares the pants off me. And,
oh, my gosh. I've seen all your loving photos, so it's, like, funny to me. Okay, so
she presents as such an airy, wispy kind of ethereal, ephemeral kind of loving spirit, but oh my God, she can be a monster.
You know what? My son would agree with you about me. He was even talking about that on one of the shows. Like, my mom's so nice, but all of a sudden, when one, like, there's another side of me that if it's taken that much for me to get to that point, I'm like, whoa, who is that soul? So I just want to compliment. So let's talk about the trip to New York, because it's a big deal that you guys made that decision to do that. And I think it was a very crucial part of the film.
It was for the film, and it was for me personally. We arrived in New York the day that Trump got elected president.
OMG.
And we walked down the streets of, I remember walking down, what was it, Central Park East, I think.
By the way, I was there for the first time in New York about a week later, and there was so much frenetic energy when I was there. It was louder than loud. I don't know if you can relate to that.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. There were people crying in the street. It was just very, very bizarre. But I did the interview with Paul, and then later Paul said, you know, look, you've got all these people in this movie like Carolyn Mace and Lee Carroll and James Van Praagh and Norm Shealy and all these amazing people. I don't feel like I deserve to be in this kind of company. And I was absolutely bowled over by his humility, and which was genuine, absolutely genuine. And I said, Paul, I remember saying this to him very specifically. I said, Paul, you will be their equal, if not more so, in a few years. You just wait. It's going to happen.
I'm getting
and
like...
Sure, And sure enough, it did help.
You know what? When you're saying this, I know this might be a bit much for part two for people who aren't familiar with Paul. Or even when I first listened to Paul for the first time, I got, he's Pleiadian. And by the way, I'm not asking anyone to believe this, and I don't know what your awareness is of that. But then I looked it up. So my understanding is that, you know, we're here in the human form, but there's a possibility that we have DNA influence from other beings. Okay. This is like for a whole nother topic, but the level of like love and service and just pure kind of the purity of his love and intention, that's what I felt. And right when I saw him channeling for the first time, when I watched the movie, that's what I got. That, and so I'm not saying I like to take the scientific method, but I think I just want to validate the purity of his loving awareness.
Oh, Paul is a real deal. Paul is a former New York University academic. He had an epiphany. If you read his books...
By the way, I have all his books on my dresser.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you read his books and you just dip into any page, the level of sophistication of thought is so complex that you can't make this stuff up. I mean, he channels this live. The first few books, his guides connected with him, and on the basis that he would record it and then send the recordings across to the West Coast to a lady named Victoria who would transcribe them. And the guide said that neither he nor Victoria were to change a word of what they had channeled through him. The guide said, "You need to record it because you won't remember what we're saying." Aww. But Denise, if you look at these recordings that are now in word form in the books, they're incredibly complex.
Yes.
Incredibly complex. There's a lot of people have difficulty with these books because the thoughts are so complex. But invariably they come down to very, very simple things.
Yes. By the way, I just want to do a pause. I call that and all this stuff, like not only with my patients, but in my productions, I call them universal truths.
Yeah. Yeah. They're absolutely universal truths. They're consistent with other of the great spiritual teachings. They're absolutely consistent, but they're framed in a different way to appeal to a different type of person. Paul was, I'm not quite sure exactly what his title was at New York University. He was a senior academic, but he was basically teaching drama and writing, theatre writing. And it's interesting how spirit chooses those people who can disseminate. For instance, Lee Carroll, who channels for Crown, was originally an audio engineer in San Diego. And Lee now disseminates his channelings via audio on his website. He's got all his channelings in audio form so that people can easily access them for free. You know, so spirit chooses people who are able to get the word out, and they chose Paul, I think, specifically for that reason.
I'm looking now,
Denise,
at this.
Sorry, if I can just say, I'll quickly interrupt here. I can't believe I'm talking this way, because you know what? Before I did PGS, if I'd heard myself saying this sort of stuff, I would have laughed my head off. I cannot believe that I'm actually saying this stuff and talking to you about spirit and channeling and all this kind of stuff.
Okay, so
this was not me like 9 years ago. This was not me at all.
Okay.
Well, I would have said, what a nutter, what a kook, what a fake, what a moron.
Okay, I love that you're doing that. And then the fact that you're calling yourself the ordinary bloke, that's really fun for me because that's very humble of you. So the ordinary bloke, AKA your current present awareness, we're in part two of Bloody Hell, No Coincidences, why don't you and I shift it almost like we're just shifting topic, because we talked about Paul Selig, but why don't we talk about different symbols and no coincidences and things that you've learned in the last decade? And I can tag off of you because I have, you know, examples of that and I help people with that. Do you want to just have some fun with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think it's very, very simple. And that is that we are not who we think we are. We think we are Bill. We think we are Denise. We think we are the bloke up at the shop that bundles up our groceries into a bag and hands them to us. We're none of that. We are spirit in this body for a period of time. We are a part of God. We are a spark of God. We are a spark of the universe. And our sole purpose is to complete the lessons that we were meant to learn during this lifetime, to hopefully grow and learn, and to return home to that place and get a list of new lessons to come back and reincarnate should we choose to. But, you know, I spent quite a bit of time with a fellow called Matt Mackay, Dr. Matt Mackay, in Berkeley. He's an extraordinary bloke. He's a professor of clinical psychology and at the university there, and he is one of the interviewees in Facing Fear. Now, he lost his son in a dreadful murder, a random street murder. He was a clinical psychologist, very empirical in his thinking, very evidence-based in his thinking. But he found a way to connect with his son, and he's now written a series of books that are channelings from his son from the other side. What's unusual for Matt Mackay is that he came from a really deeply rooted scientific background. But like me, he did a fundamental shift, and the murder of his son was the trigger point for that shift. And in these books, his son describes in quite a bit of detail what it's like on the other side. And with other readings that I've done, it's consistent with the other readings. You look at Dolores Cannon, you know, who right. is now deceased, and you know, she's very. There's a lot of YouTube stuff with Dolores Cannon. You know, she's done, I think, 10,000 readings of people and connecting with people from the other side. You watch James Van Praagh work. I mean, these people are real. There's something going on here. Paul Selig cannot make up the words that he channels through his guides. He cannot make them up. No one can make them up. They're coming from somewhere else. Now, you've got to ask the question, where are they coming from? They're coming from the spirit world.
So this is a really important intellectual bridge for you to maybe re-remember, for me to personal share with everyone. So as an adult and child psychiatrist with the Western training in, I think, about 2009, maybe 10, when I didn't realize I was not only functioning on the logic world of the Western medicine, but even throughout medical school, and especially in my residency, I would just have a clear knowing, just drop into awareness of asking the right questions before I was logically trained to do so. But I didn't even know that that's what I was doing. I mean, I would just come into a group of doctors with our little white coats because we had to wear short coats. And I remember, Bill, going in and interviewing someone and asking what's going on, and no one could figure it out. But whatever happened with our soul to soul connection, I asked him the right questions. I went into the room and people were like, what? He shared his whole life. So it was a combination of empathy meets intuition meets logic without even knowing that that's what it was. So then fast forward to like 2009 and 10, when I started having people that came to me that were children from practicing intuitives. I use the word intuitive instead of psychic because intuitive to me allows a more open space. There's a lot of words that create kind of like blockages. So once I found that as a psychiatrist, I did not want to misdiagnose people. When you're having the Western understanding of ADD, anxiety, mood, or possibly hearing voices, I want to determine, well, what's intuition, what's fear? And so I've stayed as an MD, even though I have so much passion for everything else that I'm already doing, because I have like over 40,000 hours of patient care where I integrate my Western understanding of the universe. And like, let's say someone comes to me and speaking, we can make this really tangible with your new movie, Facing Fear, that maybe this is a good way to kind of finish this current show, is that a lot of people that have generalized anxiety, low-grade depression, they have maybe the Western physiological linear Newtonian presentation, but then I add another layer of figuring out what percentage empathy are they having. And this is a lot of stuff that you can't quantify, like you've mentioned before, especially in something I just read from a script that I'm reading or a book that you sent me. So this unseen energy, I have the tangible Western logical questions to ask, but then I have that unseen energy of what percentage empath, what percentage intuitive, so that I make sure when I'm helping someone to reach their own unique thrive, that's why I came up with the idea of Embrace Your Neurostyle and Beyond. The And Beyond is also taking in account the spirit world. And I talk about neurostyle being defined as we all process and perceive things in our own unique way, biological, psychological, social, cultural, spiritual, and sixth sense intuition. So one of the big passions for knowing you and your movies and your work is myself observing your process of your logical background and then your giftedness in producing content, movies, and your intellectual curiosity that takes us on the path of what is intuition and what is fear from your perspective, so that we can help bridge it for the masses. Because, you know, there's ways to talk about this that actually helps people activate their own intuition and their own awareness. So for me, I'm a facilitator that we have all the answers within ourselves. So I just thank you. And I feel like you're maybe your five movies that you want to do, we can go over that, because your first one's intuition and now this one's fear. But I just want to thank you, because the media you're producing is so integrated into all the things that I'm interested in doing with helping people to reach their own thrive.
Mm. That's wonderful, Denise. Look, you know, I'm very selfish in my approach to this. I'm not trying to change the world or even change people. I'm curious. That's all. What's driving me is curiosity. And it's a very selfish pursuit. And within the pursuit of that curiosity, change is kind of coming to me. Although I'm not doing it to instigate change. I'm doing it really to satiate a curiosity. But what I figure is that if, you know, like I say, I'm an ordinary bloke, and if I can put this into a form, if I can package my curiosity into a form like a film that answers some questions for me, then it's going to help answer some questions for other people as well, and that's a good thing. But I'm not on a kind of a mission or anything like that. I just want to answer some fundamental questions about life that now at this point in my life, and in a couple of weeks I'll turn 69. I think now I have the wisdom to ask the right questions. I don't have the wisdom to have the answers. I have the wisdom to ask the right questions. And that's actually taken quite a long time for me to get to that point, for me to feel confident enough to ask the right questions, if that makes sense.
Well, it makes absolute sense.
Hello.
Are you there?
Have we dropped off again?
Oh, my goodness. You've got to be kidding me, everyone. Every time we have these like one-liners again. So we're finishing this part two of Bill knows how to ask the right questions.